As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
And we're back to start a new week with another edition of The Athletic Hockey Show. I'm Ian Mendes alongside Haley Salvian. On this episode of the podcast, we'll chat about the botched video review in the Jackets-Hurricanes game. We'll ask, how could the NHL get something so wrong? We'll hit on the Vancouver Canucks and Florida Panthers, a couple of teams going in opposite directions. Our beat reporter from Buffalo, John Vogel, will drop by, chat about how the Sabres are angry at the way COVID protocols were handled when they played New Jersey. We'll open up the hailbag, find out how Haley has been enjoying the Battle of Alberta, and in Multiple Choice Madness, we'll discuss what's more likely this 56-game season, 100 points from Connor McDavid or 50 goals from Austin Matthews. So lots to get to on the podcast. Haley, first of all, the most important question, what was on Haley Salvian's Super Bowl menu on Sunday?
That is a good question. So I actually got an air fryer, a new air fryer, and I was excited. I was basically just trying all these different things. And of course, you know, we are in a pandemic. I did not have friends over. Like, I watched the Super Bowl with my air fryer. I made deep fried pickles, and I'm celiac. So this is important. I'm celiac. So I got like gluten-free breadcrumbs and I got my pickles and I tried out a new recipe and I put them in the air fryer, and it was the most amazing evening ever because I haven't been able to have deep fried pickles in years, like over 10 years, because they're always breaded, they're always gluten. So I made gluten-free deep fried pickles with my air fryer, chicken wings. It was just like a mess. Wasn't good for one person to be eating on a Sunday. Just not smart at all. But it was good. I was very happy with the pickles. So
Haley, we're living parallel lives. You're not going to believe what's the appliance my wife and I bought yesterday.
Air fryer.
Yes, we bought an air fryer. How did we both buy an air fryer on this same at the same time, cracking out for the Super Bowl, and we did chicken wings? I'm blown away by this. And this is not us fishing for an air fryer sponsorship for this podcast. This is us legitimately. I was blown away. Like, this is great. So yeah, I did chicken wings, and I'm a big fan. Big fan of the air fryer.
It's amazing because you don't have to deal with all the oil. Like, it's way less messy. Like, when I was growing up, we always had a deep fryer. Like, my mom would make french fries, chicken wings, whatever. But the cleanup, like, we would all get in fights in my family of, like, who has to clean the deep fryer out? Yeah. And so I was like, why don't we just get an air fryer? Because you don't have to clean and deal with all that oil. And so, it was a lot smarter. It's, like, way less mess. You don't have to clean all that oil. So not fishing for a sponsorship, but no, I definitely, I mean, we already have an air fryer, so, you know, it's too little too late for that, but do love the air fryer a
lot. There you go. See, and I love it too. No mess at all. But Haley, that takes us right into a very messy situation for the National Hockey League. And that is, and they're probably really happy that this happened on Super Bowl Sunday, because I think most of the attention in the sports world was on Tampa and Kansas City and not on Columbus and Carolina. But just to walk our listeners through, Aaron Portsline has an unbelievable breakdown and a deep dive into what went wrong yesterday. We'll just call it a bizarre chain of events where the Carolina Hurricanes scored a goal late in the second period yesterday against Columbus. But on video review, Haley, it was blatantly clear that Hurricanes forward Vincent Trocheck, who scored the goal, he's clearly offside. And he's into the attacking zone ahead of the puck. So, you know, okay, well, listen, we're going to, if you're Columbus, you're John Tortorella, I'm going to throw the challenge flag, so to speak. We're going to get this looked at in video review. Well, here's where it becomes a series of unfortunate events. It turns out that the off-ice officials in Columbus at Nationwide Arena are in the process of training a new video coordinator. Because what's a better time to teach somebody, you know, bring them in than during an actual NHL game? And so the video technician accidentally, who's brand new at their job, accidentally relayed information to the officials on the ice that communicated that it's a good goal. So the linesmen that were on the ice at the time, they take off their headsets and they're like, wow, we heard good goal. It turns out it wasn't a good goal, but now all you know what is broken loose. And Colin Campbell was actually watching this play out. And so they allow the goal to stand, Haley. And again, I'm trying to make this the most abbreviated version of the story. But so now the goal stands. And because the Jackets have challenged an offside and got it wrong, now they get slapped with a penalty for delay of game, because that's what the rule is. So there's a minute 15 left in the second period. The Jackets are now shorthanded. It's a double whammy. They give up a goal that never should have stood, and they get a penalty. So they kill off the minute 15, so there's about 45 seconds left to go in the penalty to start the third period. Well, guess what? That's where the NHL steps in and says, look, we've made a mistake here. They send the on-ice officials to the dressing rooms, and it's some compelling footage. The Fox Sports broadcasters were able to catch it. The officials go to the dressing rooms of both the Jackets and the Hurricanes and explain, we've made a mistake. We're going to cancel the penalty now. We're not going to get rid of the goal. We're going to cancel the penalty. Colin Campbell says, Haley, you know what? I wanted to reverse the goal, but there's no precedent for it. But yet, I don't think there's ever any precedent for reversing a power play in the middle of the power play, but they did that. So yeah. I guess Colin Campbell, the key statement here that he gave Aaron Portsline was, I told Jarmo Kekalainen, I wish we could strike the goal, but there's no precedent for that. Instead, Haley, they decided to cancel the remaining 45 seconds of the penalty kill to start the third period. So where are we at with this? Because there's no precedent for stopping a penalty halfway through. Why wouldn't they just go back and change the goal ruling?
Well, exactly. And like you said, it was clearly offside. Like if you go and watch the playback, you zoom in, you watch it all, like you can see the big circle, even in Portsline's piece, like you can see in the still frame, like he is offside. So it just doesn't really make much sense if you're going to admit wrongdoing. Like, to admit that you got the call wrong, like, I don't even know how to explain this, Ian, because it's such a mess. Like, to take away the penalty means that the coach's challenge was correct, right? Which would mean that he was offside, which would mean that the goal doesn't stand. So if you're getting rid of the last 45 seconds of the penalty, you are admitting that the coach's challenge was not a delay of gain, that he was correct in his coach's challenge, which means he was offside, which means that the goal doesn't stand. So it just doesn't make sense. Like, how can you take away one without taking away the other? Like, you are admitting that he was right and that you're wrong, but they still get a goal. Like, I don't even, and I'm one of the ones who was watching the Super Bowl, you know, I wasn't really, quite frankly, I was not watching Columbus, Carolina yesterday. Right. And when we were talking about this before getting on the podcast, I saw Portsline's story and I was like, what the heck happened last night? Like, was I living under a rock? Like, how did I not see this mess? Because it's a mess. And like, if you're Jarmo Kekalainen and he's saying, I'm sorry, like we should have taken the goal back. Like, what's Kekalainen supposed to say? Like, well, then why didn't you do it?
this is the time. Like, this was the precedent. Like, you can't not do something because it's never been done before, because if we use that as our logic moving forward, you'll never change anything. You'll just be like, well, that's never happened before. We can't. No, you got to be the first. Like, let's inject. And this is what I've always felt like with when it comes to video replay, regardless of the situation, whether it's goalie interference or offside, if we could just inject common sense. Like, what if we took a common sense approach? So I think, while you might have some angry Hurricanes fans who are like, well, that goal counted, you can't change. Well, let's inject common sense into it, okay? And common sense dictates, like you just said it, Haley, if you're rescinding the penalty was for getting the call wrong. Well, you got the call right, so what are the other ramifications from altering that call? And it's just, it's mind-blowing to me. This was the opportunity. And I know that as at the end of Aaron Portsline's piece, he said the NHL is going to consider multiple options in light of this. And in one of the things, Haley, is the league has wanted to be able to basically stop the play from any arena that they want from the Situation Room in Toronto. Meaning, yeah, if they see something, they don't want to have to try and gain the attention of the off-ice official in the penalty box, because again, with COVID and all, there's all sorts of things going on. They want to basically be able to have, like, they should have one of those big red staples, that was easy buttons. They can press it and then the game stops. But yeah, if you I don't know if you've ever been at a game where this has happened. I have been, but it's been years. If you're ever at a game and let's say, and I'm going to use the team that you cover as an example, the Calgary Flames. So let's say the Flames are playing the Edmonton Oilers and Johnny Gaudreau has the puck and he comes into the Edmonton zone and he rips a high shot. He beats Mikko Koskinen and it goes in and out so quickly. The on-ice referee waves his hand. Hey, no goal. He thought he'd hit the crossbar. But the off-ice officials are watching the game and they realize, guess what? That puck went in. It hit the back part of the net and came out. There is a horn that they can sound in the arena. We jokingly refer to it as like the horn of doom. It's like big horn goes, everybody stops and you realize, uh-oh, we got to rewind because that's a goal and nothing that happens from here on in is actually real because this is the game should stop. That's what I'm wondering. How they couldn't have done that yesterday, even 15 seconds after the goal, just stop it. We got it wrong. Yeah. Nobody, who's going to complain about you getting it? Get the call right. I think that's the end goal that we should all be striving for.
Yeah. And also, you know, I think that should be an obvious thing, but then you also, like, I just can't get past, and I feel bad. Like, I'm sure whoever this, you know, in training video coordinator is, like, I'm sure he didn't mean to speak into the microphone and say that's a good goal and seem like official, but how do you, you're training, sit and watch, like no one is paying you to say like, oh, that's a good goal. Like, can you just picture the guy sitting there like watching being like, oh, I think that's a goal. I think that's good. Like it's a good goal. And then the guy on the headset being like, oh yeah, we hear a good goal, when there's only one person who's allowed to be speaking and saying that. And your job, who just said it, is to just coordinate who's watching the video. Like, I just, everything that could have gone wrong here went wrong. And of course, Columbus loses the hockey game by one goal.
And by one goal. Yeah, exactly.
Like, this is just, you know, if Columbus would have won by a couple or Carolina won by a few, it was a blowout. You can look past it. But a one goal game after something like that. And it's John Tortorella, who is the coach. Ooh. Yeah, that's definitely, it just kind of blows everything else that kind of happened on the ice, at least this week, kind of out of the water, like just such a mess. And Aaron Portsline did such a great job kind of teeing all that up and explaining the inside look of what a mess and what a gong show that was.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We do encourage all of our listeners, check out Aaron Portsline's piece today. Just a deep dive, a conversation with Colin Campbell and just walking us through exactly how that chain of events unfolded. And I think this has to be a learning lesson for everybody. Coaches, on-ice officials, league officials, situation room. Everybody's got to take this situation and say, how do we fix this and never have this happen again? And of course, it, like you said, had to be a one-goal game. If Carolina wins this game 8-4 or Columbus wins this game, it's still a talking point, but it's the, you know, it might not feel as significant, but this is important because you cannot have this happening down the road. So I think that was obviously the biggest story coming out of the weekend. But as we bounce around and check out some other storylines, Haley, the temperature continues to get turned up in Vancouver. And you think to yourself, if they didn't get those three games against Ottawa earlier this season where they beat Ottawa three straight games, outscoring the Senators 16-3 in the process, we might be seeing wholesale changes in Vancouver. I know you're sitting in a city where you've got Jacob Markstrom and Chris Tanev, and I know you want to give a big shout out to our Vancouver listeners for that. But like, where are the Vancouver Canucks right now? Because if you take out the games they've played against Ottawa, they might be the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, it's such a difficult question to answer because it's such a weird case study, this Vancouver Canucks team, because if you look at, you know, they have some young studs on their team. I mean, Quinn Hughes is, you know, he's up there in league scoring. He's having a good season. He's having a good sophomore year. I'm not seeing a huge, huge slump, at least in terms of production levels. You have a player like Brock Besser. You have Elias Pettersson. Like, this is not a team that's strapped for young talent. But yeah, we're seeing them in the basement of the standings in the North Division. And it's difficult to pinpoint exactly what's going wrong. I mean, I think, you know, losing Chris Tanev and Jacob Markstrom were huge for the Vancouver Canucks, quite frankly. I mean, every time I post something about Tanev or Markstrom, I get a bunch of replies from Canucks fans being like, you're welcome, or oh, I miss you. So obviously losing two players like that is hugely significant. And I just think, you know, that Tyler Toffoli was a mistake, like not making more of an effort faster to keep Tyler Toffoli. He's just wreaking havoc on the Canucks this year with the Montreal Canadiens. Like, it's just been this weird revenge tour against the Canucks all season, it seems like. Jacob Markstrom gets the shutout in his first game. I mean, Toffoli has how many? I don't even have it in front of me. I should have, because he has quite a few goals against the Vancouver Canucks this season. I mean, Chris Tanev played really well. It's just, I think there's a ton of heat on that team. There's a ton of heat on, you know, I don't even know if this is a Travis Green issue rather than it's a Benning issue, quite frankly. Like, he's the one that constructed this team. He's been there for a long time. I just don't see what the short or long-term plan is with the Vancouver Canucks right now. And that's a problem because you just look at how much promise they showed in the playoffs last season and in the regular season as well. And Canucks fans, a lot of them will tell you a lot of what happened last season was being bailed out by Jacob Markstrom, but I just don't know what the vision here is for the Vancouver Canucks, and there seems to be some kind of identity crisis. And I think Kevin Bieksa said it really well in Hockey Night in Canada. He's like, that's the team that everyone loves. They have fun playing against the Vancouver Canucks, and that's not what you want to be dubbed as, is the team that everyone is excited to play against because they know they're going to start padding their stats. It's a really bad look in Vancouver right now.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? If I had to kind of figure out who's got the hottest seat there, it's Jim Benning. It's not even close, right? Like, I think even if you ask the average, I love Sean McIndoe in his Down Goes Brown kind of weekly column today. He said Canucks fans are at the point with Jim Benning where basically they want to see him fired. They want to see him be escorted out of the building with his boxes, all of his personal belongings. Then they want to then the Canucks fans want to see Benning rehired just so they can fire him again. Like, that's kind of where it's at with Vancouver fans. And I think so. It's like, they strike me as a team, Haley. And I don't know if they're waiting for the general manager to change out or personnel. They look like a team waiting for something to happen. Whether it's like, and you listen to some of the comments from Bo Horvat and Elias Pettersson, they are waiting for something to happen. And it's not an indictment of the players. I feel like they're waiting for something. Like, the other shoe has to drop here. And it's a mess. But let's go from a mess in Vancouver to the other coast, where the Florida Panthers, Haley, if I had to pick, if somebody said to me a month ago, hey, Ian, hey, Haley, pick the last team in the NHL that's going to suffer a regulation time loss, who you got? I'd be like, oh, well, maybe it's going to be St. Louis or Colorado or Boston or Tampa or Vegas. It's the Florida Panthers, Haley. They finally lost the game in regulation time on the weekend. 4-1, they lose to Detroit, but they're 6-1-2. They've been racking up points at an impressive pace here. Like, how are we feeling about the Florida Panthers here? Are they, like, potentially, like, are they just a playoff team? Are they a dark horse contender? Like, they're 6-1-2 and looking pretty good under Coach Q.
Yeah, well, I don't even know if calling them a dark horse is fair either. And again, I think this is my Canadian bias with this North Division. I feel like if you ask anyone who's covering the league right now, it just kind of seems like what team you're kind of covering, unless you're a national reporter, you're just so, you know, narrow-minded in the division that you're in. And it's just kind of separating everything, which is, I mean, I watched the Detroit-Tampa game the other day because there's no North Division games on. I was like, this is so weird. I think if you were looking at some of the moves that the Florida Panthers made in the offseason, I don't think the Panthers would be a bad team. I think they were just a team that, you know, I think we discussed this in an early episode or we've talked about this before, but, you know, when you looked at the Florida Panthers before they played, it was like, okay, well, what is this team? We don't really know. They signed Anthony Duclair. I mean, there was all of those questions and controversy around Keith Theandle. But then again, you have Coach Q, who is not an insignificant person to have behind the bench. So I don't know if I'm surprised by the Florida Panthers being as good as they are, because I just didn't have any expectations for the Florida Panthers. And I don't know if that's just because they were this team where you'd look at them in the offseason and just be like, well, I don't really know what they're going to be. Let's wait and see. So I wouldn't call them a dark horse. I wouldn't call them a huge surprise either. I think they're just playing some solid hockey right now. Like that, I feel like it's as simple as just, yeah, that's a pretty good team with a good coach and they're playing good hockey. And it's as kind of as simple as that.
And, you know, we'll get to this in Multiple Choice Madness in a couple of in a few minutes after we get to John Vogel. But the goaltending situation there is compelling to me. Like, I think if they had a game to win tonight, it might be Chris Drieger ahead of Sergei Bobrovsky. But again, like I said, we'll get to that. And look, we got John Vogel coming up on deck here, Haley. Before we get to John, I do want to ask you about one other story, which I think was rather significant on the weekend. And I know that you follow PWHPA very closely, and you've been covering women's hockey very closely. Can you walk us through the significance of an organization like the Toronto Maple Leafs providing some sponsorship and support to the PWHPA?
Yeah, well, it's huge. And I think if you just kind of look back, the PWHPA was created out of the boycott from some of the best players in the world. I mean, not some, the best players in the world. All the Canadian, all the American Olympians, the players that you see at the World, the players you see at the Olympics, they've been boycotting. They will not play in any of the professional leagues in North America, which right now is just the National Women's Hockey League, whose bubble did get suspended due to COVID concerns. So the PWHPA players have kind of just been playing in these showcases. They've been practicing as groups, much less so obviously now due to COVID-19. But, you know, it's hugely significant because the reasons why the PWHPA are doing what they're doing and that's sitting out from the pro leagues is they don't believe that the leagues that are out there right now are truly professional. I did a big story about this over in the summertime, just about over the last 23 years, since the very, very first Women's Professional League was ever created, there's always been concerns about the longevity of the leagues, about the business model of the leagues, and we've seen, you know, two leagues fail already and fold, and the NWHL is still around there. They just finished, as I said, that bubble. So I think these players, they have, you know, really long-standing concerns about the state of professional women's hockey. And they believe that the only way that the pro women's game can be truly successful is if they have the marketing, the infrastructure, and the resources that NHL teams do. So what the PWHPA is looking for is an NHL partnership, more or less a WNHL. And that's one of the reasons why they're boycotting, is they're kind of making a stand and say, we're not going to play until we get the resources we deserve. And the Toronto Maple Leafs, this partnership is an exact, you know, example of what the PWHPA is looking for, because the Leafs, they're going to host a game when it's safe to do so in Canada and Ontario. They're going to give them marketing support. They're going to give them like social media support, sponsorship support. They're giving them support and they're giving them resources and they're helping them with their infrastructure that the pro women's game, in their opinion, has lacked. So this partnership is huge because it's exactly what the PWHPA says the women's leagues don't have and what they need. And the Leafs are coming forward and providing that for them. And they're going to be playing a game at Scotiabank Arena. So it's huge. And I think it just kind of, for the PWHPA perspective, I think something like that could inspire other teams to do the same, which could, you know, we could see that really snowball into something much bigger than just a couple of partnerships.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, Haley. Well, listen, we've touched on some of the big stories around the National Hockey League over the weekend. I still think one of the biggest stories right now is what's going on in terms of the COVID protocols. And we've seen a number of teams be put on the shelf. And I think the team that's been certainly the most vocal, it feels like, Haley, the Buffalo Sabres. And we're really pleased to be joined by our Sabres beat reporter, John Vogel out of Buffalo. John, first of all, apologies for inviting a Buffalo guy onto the podcast the day after Tom Brady wins the Super Bowl.
It was, there's a lot of friends of mine who were not happy with that game. That's for, you can put it that way. Yeah. That's anybody but Brady is kind of the thing in Buffalo, as you well know. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, listen, we didn't bring you in to rub salt in the wounds of Buffalo sports fans, but we do want to talk about, and I thought you hit the, you hit it out of the park last week with your column where you can definitely sense that there's it's palpable anger from the Buffalo Sabres organization, people in Erie County. Like, can you just walk us through the level of anger as it pertains to COVID protocols maybe not being followed, John, with the in and around the Buffalo Sabres?
Yeah, it's for sure. There were a lot of angry people just because it was a situation that seems like it could have been avoided. Obviously, the New Jersey Devils came to town for back-to-back games on a Saturday and Sunday. Friday, they had one player go on the protocols, which raised the Sabres' radar a little bit. And they're like, all right, well, one guy's on, we'll see. And then the first game Saturday, Kyle Palmieri played for the Devils. And then between the end of that game and the beginning of the next one, he went on the COVID protocols list. So the Sabres were like, hey, we just played against a guy who's now on the list. They made some calls to the NHL. Which I'll let the NHL say they are declining to acknowledge that those calls were made. But I have multiple sources, including the county executive and health directors in Buffalo, say those calls were made to the NHL. They were saying, hey, we don't really want to play. We just let's postpone this game. Let's take a break. And instead, the game went on as scheduled and chaos ensued. The next day, the Devils had four more players go on. On the Tuesday, the Sabres got shut down. They had two players go on. It's now up to nine. So they've got nine players on the list, plus coach Ralph Kruger, who's 61. Obviously, he's bringing that into his household. I'm not sure how old his wife is, but she's in the same age range. So, I mean, that's a risk category. This all happened to the fact that the thing that got the Sabres mad is they believe it could have been avoided if they hadn't played that Sunday game.
And you mentioned Ralph Kruger, and we can get into a little bit more about how something like this even happens, even though it's a really difficult question to answer. But to me, you know, even back in the return to play, I know a lot of the quite irresponsible discourse, because we know it's not true, but a lot of the discourse is around, oh, well, they're young, they're in really great shape, it's fine, they can rebound. A lot of the coaches in the National Hockey League are not young. They don't have you know, Ralph Krueger, like you said, he's in his 60s. So is there a sense of how Ralph Krueger, his family are doing right now after this protocol?
There have not been any updates from the Sabres as to how he's doing. Hopefully good. I haven't heard anything either way. So that I can't answer. But yeah, Sabres assistant coach Don Granato last year was hospitalized with a serious health situation. So this Sabres slogan since they gathered in late December was stay positive, test negative. They've been very vocal about, hey, we need to stay ahead of this. We don't want to take any chances. That was reinforced. They were going to Washington just as the Capitals got their $100,000 fine for some protocol violations. That reinforced to the team that, hey, we can't really mess around here. It's going to cost both money and players, so let's take it easy. And then this happened, which is what made them angry, because they think they took all the steps necessary to avoid a situation like this, and yet here they are ensnared in it.
You know, John, we saw last week the NHL sort of, and we know that they had to be adaptable and flexible throughout the course of the season. And we saw some new protocols in place, like removing the glass behind the players' benches and different mechanisms for, hey, you can only show up to the rink at a certain time. Do you believe that the Sabres kind of loud, complaining about this was one of the catalysts for that in-season change?
I think that did help for sure. I think also the NHL has realized the one thing Bill Daly said is, hey, if things start to prove otherwise, we'll adapt. And I think they had to. The NHL and NHLPA both told me that they did not believe there was evidence of cross-team transmission, which they weren't worried about that, which is kind of the reason the game went on that Sunday. But they've now learned that, hey, maybe there is cross-team transmission, which led to those four changes this week. And I know Mike Russo reported today that the league is now going to start sending COVID-19 samples to, I believe it was the Mayo Clinic, to check to see the sequencing, to see where they come from and if there is indeed cross-team transmission. So I think they realized that they did have to make some changes. And I think the Sabres yelling about it did contribute to that. Yeah.
You mentioned a lot of the anger and the frustration, and in your column, you did call this, you know, the players knew that there would be a risk, you know, with COVID-19, but they didn't want there to be any unnecessary ones. Do you feel like what the NHL has done thus far has been reactive instead of proactive? And how much of an issue is that, you know, for the Sabres or even for the league? And we're seeing now that the Sabres were shut down. But again, that seems like a bit of a reactive measure instead of something proactive, which I'm sure the Sabres would have preferred.
Yes, for sure. I think you just nailed it right there. There was a lot of reaction instead of proactive measures. It's just been interesting, the fact that the players, they just want to play. They all said that they're happy to be back. They knew they were taking a risk there, but they're happy to be back. The league has a chance to grow just because they came back. They know that they wanted to do their best and just go out there and stay on the TV. Basically, they just wanted to keep playing, draw the fans in, keep the fans engaged until things return to normal. And now just because of this, they can't. And from the players I've heard about, that's one of the disappointing things, is they really wanted to just keep going and try to be as normal as possible. And then this changed everything.
And, you know, Monday we should have had a Sabres Bruins game that, of course, has been put on the shelf for now. Just looking at this team now, how does this affect the Buffalo Sabres? And again, we're in that spot, John, where I think a lot of people were very curious about Buffalo, right? Coming into the season, they pick up Taylor Hall. Are they ready to take that next step from being one of those teams in the 20s in the overall standings and into the playoff conversation? And it's been, I guess, just an okay start. Is that fair to say? But what does this pause do for the Buffalo Sabres?
It's a significant pause just in the fact that if the Sabres do come back Thursday, which is up in the air, but as of now, that's their next scheduled game is Thursday. They have the nine guys out, includes their top four defensemen, Taylor Hall. I mean, it's just that their lineup is going to be a lot different, but it does impact everything. Just in the fact that they haven't, they were just getting into it a little bit, I guess. There's so many new faces. Hall and Eichel were playing together, and it took them, as talented as they are, it still takes people time to get to know each other on the ice. The Sabres have a 500 record, despite those two only having three goals combined. So they were hoping to really start stepping things up when they get back. But the thing is, now they might not be back yet. I mean, I'm looking at the list, and it is the MVP this season, believe it or not, has been Rasmus Ristolainen for the team. He's on the list. There's a lot of guys who are getting significant minutes and significant contributions that won't be in the lineup for a while. So that is quite the change. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting.
That's just a significant hit to the continuity and chemistry of a team. And as you mentioned, there are so many new faces, Taylor Hall, kind of the most notable one included. And you mentioned this morning that another player was added to the list. Was it Rasmus Dahlin that was added to the COVID protocol list as well?
Yes, that's correct. So some of the Sabres' youngest players have been added to the list. Rookie Dylan Cousins went on, Casey Mittelstadt and Rasmus Dahlin went on just now. So there's a wide variety of guys. Every line and defense pair has been impacted as I look at this in here. And if they do return Thursday, another thing that impacts them, the scheduling. All these games are now, they've added five back-to-back situations. They average a game every 1.85 days through the end of the regular season if they do come back Thursday. And if that gets pushed back, then obviously the time crunch happens even more. So this would be a major impact both on and off the ice.
I mean, and if I can jump in again here, Ian, and I'm sure this is something that you and I will get into as well with the rest of the show, but being a reporter on a team who's, you're right in the middle of all these COVID protocols and some of the issues that we're seeing the league have, what's your level of concern or level of confidence that Buffalo actually plays a 56-game season?
That is a good question. Because if this does extend into the time, I mean, I know they have a couple days after the season they could add some games, but yeah, now we're if this does stretch into into next week, then yeah, maybe you are looking at a less than a 56 game schedule. I hadn't given that a lot of thought yet because there's been a lot going on. But I did. You mentioned the NHL and all the protocols and stuff. It's funny. It's not funny, unfortunately. But I told my wife they had made all these rules to keep reporters away from the NHL in the arena. But it turns out I'm glad that they kept the NHL away from me because there have been so many lapses that I'm just glad that we're distanced.
Well, hey, listen, that's a great place to leave it off. And we do hope that I know that we're wishing you, John, the best in health in terms of staying safe, because obviously it's an issue there in Western New York. So appreciate you taking a few minutes to chat with us. And I can't wait. At some point, John, it's going to be Senators Sabres Eastern Conference Final. And we're going to do it up like it's 2007.
We'll have to bring everybody back, bring some Andrew Peters. And yeah, it'd be a fun time for all those teams. Yeah, for sure.
Thanks a lot, John.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Take care.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay, Haley, it is time for our favorite Monday segment, and that would be Multiple Choice Madness. Here we go. I got five questions for us to tackle on this Monday. Let's start with this, Haley, and I know we're only, most teams are about 10 to 12 games into the season, and we're starting to project out. Let me ask you this. Haley, you got to pick one of these things that's more likely to happen. Is it going to be A, Austin Matthews scores 50 goals, or B, Connor McDavid gets 100 points?
I'm going to say Austin Matthews. I'm so sorry. I have a French bulldog and he's snoring so loudly. So if anyone can hear this on the podcast, it's not me. It's the dog. Bono's making the Athletic Hockey Show debut here, it seems. I'm going to say Austin Matthews scores 50 goals. I know Dom was on and he kind of talked about how it is mathematically possible for Connor McDavid to score 100. But I think that goal that Austin Matthews scored the other day, he kind of broke through the neutral zone, toe drag. His release is so fast. I even the guys on the ice who are good players were like, nobody even, like, you blink and you missed everything that just happened. So I think Austin Matthews, his release is probably one of the, it's just really impressive. So I'm going to go with Austin. And as a side note, you know, being a Calgary Flames reporter, I tweeted one thing about McDavid and I just get shredded every time. So Connor's not getting to 100. I'll just say that for all the Flames fans listening. But Oilers fans, don't hate me. No, I'm just going to ignore that. I'm just going to go with Austin Matthews.
And you know what, though? Actually, it's great because coming up in the Hailbag, we do have a question about how you've enjoyed the Battle of Alberta, so we'll get to that. I'm going to answer this question, Haley, and I'm going to say Connor McDavid to 100 points. And I think part of it is for Austin Matthews to get 50 goals in 56 games, he's basically going to have to do like 50 and 50. And we haven't seen that happen. Ovechkin hasn't done 50 and 50, even when he was at the peak of his powers. I'd love to see it. And I think Austin Matthews, I have never in my time watching the NHL, you know, 30 some odd years, we'll call it, of me watching the NHL and really understanding the game, have I ever seen a player shoot the puck like Austin Matthews. This is out of this world. But by saying that, I've also never seen a player with the talent and the ability to do what he does in high speed like Connor McDavid. And I think if you look at it right now, Matthews is on pace for 51 goals. In fact, all you have to do is check James Myrtle's Twitter, right? He's like, Austin Matthews is on pace for 51. I say he does it. So we always know when Matthews is on pace for, okay? So Matthews is on pace as we sit here in early February for 51 goals. McDavid is on pace for 112 points. And the reason why I'll give McDavid the edge, Haley, I think he's got a little bit more of a buffer, if that makes sense. Like, to get to 100 points is going to be a touch easier than getting to 50 goals. I'd love to see both these things happen because that's what I think the game needs. I think we need to celebrate the young stars. I don't know that there's two more talented players in the league than Austin Matthews and Connor McDavid. I would love if they both got to those plateaus, but I'll take McDavid getting to 100 points being a little bit more likely to happen than Austin Matthews getting to 50. Okay, on to question number two in multiple choice madness. Which team that made the playoffs last year, Haley, should be most concerned that as we kind of get into the second week of February here, that they're sitting in 20th place or worse in the overall standings? Is it A, your now beloved Calgary Flames at 21st overall? Is it B, the Pittsburgh Penguins 22nd overall? C, the New York Islanders 24th overall? Or D, the Nashville Predators 27th overall? So I'll go first on this one, Haley. And I think for me, there's only one team on this list that I think figured they had Stanley Cup aspirations. That was Pittsburgh. And with all due respect to Calgary, the Islanders, and Nashville, they don't have Sid, they don't have Gino, and they just didn't have the aspirations. And to me, Pittsburgh sitting there with that 860 whatever save percentage they have out of Casey DeSmith and Tristan Jarry is unacceptable. And that's the biggest area of concern. So to me, the playoff team that should be the most concerned, also because I think they're in a tough division. And you've seen Boston elevate to the top of it. Washington's been pretty good. Philly's been pretty good. Like, there's not a lot of wiggle room here for Pittsburgh. And I think they should be pretty concerned. So amongst Calgary, Pittsburgh, the Islanders, Nashville, I think Pittsburgh should be the most concerned that they're sitting in 22nd overall. What about you?
Well, I will say, I think with the Penguins, they're once again dealing with a ton of injuries. I don't know what it is about the luck of the Penguins this last couple seasons, but you know, looking at a report from Josh Yohe, just the amount of players who have been injured for the Penguins to start the season, who've missed games. It's just, last season was crazy for injuries for the Penguins. The year before that was crazy for the Penguins. I see that being a lot. And they've still found a way to play, to win some games here and there. And, you know, they're finding ways to win. So I'm not super concerned with the Penguins because they do have Sidney Crosby and they do have Evgeny Malkin. So I could always see that team turning the corner. I don't know if they had Stanley Cup aspirations, but I'm going to say the Nashville Predators. I just think that's a team who has kind of underperformed the last couple of years. They just always seem to underperform. They have some good players, at least on paper. They have a ton of big contracts. You know, Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene are way, way up there in terms of scoring chances for with the fewest goals. And Ryan Johansson has been snake bitten and he missed the last game due to an injury. But I just think the Nashville Predators have just, on paper, they've seemed to be good, but they haven't been able to put it together. And this is just another example of that so far this season. And that's certainly a team, like, they're not rebuilding. Like, look at the contracts, look at the players they have. That's not a rebuilding team. I don't know if they're a legitimate Stanley Cup contender because they're 27th in the league right now. But that's certainly not where they expected to be. And that's not when you've got players like that on your team.
Well, as we move on to question three, I mentioned that Pittsburgh's had some problems in goal, but I don't think they have a goalie controversy. They're just looking for any goalie that can make some saves. But there are a couple of spots, Haley, around the league where maybe we're starting to see, the seeds for a goalie controversy get planted. So I'm going to ask you this. What team in the NHL might be facing a goalie controversy on the horizon where the backup goalie right now statistically is outperforming the established number one starter? Is it A, in Florida, where Chris Drieger could maybe take over for Sergei Bobrovsky? Is it B, Jake Allen maybe pushing Carey Price out of the net in Montreal? C, Jaro Halak replacing Tuukka Rask in Boston? Or D, Brian Elliott? I know Carter Hart is 5-2-2, but if you look at the numbers, save percentage, goals against, Brian Elliott's actually been better than Carter Hart. So where, Haley Salvian, could we see a goalie controversy?
I don't know if it would be a huge controversy, but I do think that if Brian Elliott were to take over for such a young up-and-comer in Carter Hart, that would raise some eyebrows considering, you know, how much everyone's talked about Carter Hart being this, you know, big up-and-comer, not just for Philadelphia, but in the league. You know, I think he was actually on quite a few of the projected Olympic rosters over last week, when we had, you know, LeBron, Burnside, Dom Luschishin did one. Carter Hart was like a big kind of popular guy to put on your Olympic roster. So I would say that if Brian Elliott were to overtake Carter Hart, I think controversy is very dramatic, Ian. but I would say that would be one that I think for me, if I saw that, it would raise some eyebrows because you're just like, oh, this kid was a stud. Everyone was, you know, put such high expectations on him and now he's kind of getting surpassed. But I don't even see that being something long term. It just would be kind of interesting, in my opinion.
You know what? Listen, they know all about that in Philly. Like, that's where goalie controversies were invented, was in Philly. So I think they're looking at this, they're like, we've seen this movie before. The one that jumps out at me right now, and look, I've seen a lot of Habs reporters talking about Jake Allen. Could he take, is he better than Carey Price? I still think when push comes to shove, Carey Price is going to be the guy for that team when they get to the playoffs. But I'm telling you, Haley, I'm looking at that situation in Florida. I'm looking at Bobrovsky's $10 million contract. I'm looking at Chris Drieger, who's essentially a journeyman who's bounced around. And Drieger statistically has been so much better than Sergei Bobrovsky. You have to ask yourself, if the Panthers had a game to win tonight, who would they put in? Because I feel like if the Habs had a game to win tonight, it would still be Carey Price. But right now, when you look at the stat line in Florida, Chris Drieger, 937 save percentage, 197 goals against, 3-1-1 record. Sergei Bobrovsky, yeah, he's 3-0-1, but his save percentage is 881. His goals against is north of 3.5. It's like they're winning in spite of Bobrovsky, and we've seen this before. Like, he struggled last year. So I know that Florida doesn't have the media market of those other places like Philly, like Montreal, like Boston. But I do think we're getting closer and closer to maybe seeing Chris Drieger pushing out Sergei Bobrovsky in Florida. And Joel Quenneville knows when you got a goalie that can take you places, you got to go with the hot hand. So I would say that's the one I would pick. On to question four, Haley, multiple choice madness. There are four players who are sitting in the top 10 of league scoring right now that I would categorize as kind of surprising, that maybe at the start of the year you wouldn't have thought that you would see these guys sitting in the top 10 in league scoring. So my question is, which player sitting in the top 10 in league scoring has the best chance of maybe sticking around the top 10 in the weeks ahead? Is it A, James Van Riemsdyk, B, Nick Backstrom, C, Quinn Hughes, or D, Joe Pavelski? So I'll go first on this one. I had no idea that JVR was off to this start until about like a week ago when I was like, man, James Van Riemsdyk is tearing it up. I don't see him stand there. The one guy that I can see stand around, Haley, is Quinn Hughes. And I think because Vancouver potentially could be a fun offensive team to watch, and you talked about it earlier where they have the talent, but they have that reputation of maybe being too fun. Quinn Hughes is just racking up the points. And He's a guy that I think with Cale Makar, those two guys have an opportunity to be kind of like the next generation of the Erik Karlssons who could finish in the top 10 in league scoring. And this is not a knock on JVR or Nicky Backstrom or Joe Pavelski. I think it's a young man's league. And if you're asking me who's got the best chance in a truncated 56 game season where you're probably playing every other night, give me the young defenseman who's got the legs for days and it can go. I think he's got a chance to do it. What about you?
Yeah, well, I would definitely agree. I think Quinn Hughes probably is the most likely to stay there. But I think the interesting thing is if you look at JVR and Backstrom and Pavelski, they all have fewer games than Quinn Hughes. And except for Pavelski, they all have more points than Quinn Hughes. So, just looking at JVR, he's only played 13 games. He has 7 goals, 11 points. Or 11 assists, 18 points, and he's only averaging about 15:40. So he's averaging under 16 minutes. Quinn Hughes is averaging just over 22 minutes per game. Joe Pavelski's playing around 20. Backstrom's playing around 20. So JVR is a really interesting case to look at because he's only played 13 games. He has 18 points. He's averaging the fewest minutes of anybody, even just a quick scroll through. He's averaging the fewest minutes of anybody, at least within this top 20, potentially the top 30, with under 16 minutes per game. So I don't know if that's JVR just being incredibly efficient, if he's getting some puck luck right now. His scoring percentage or his shooting percentage, is pretty high at 23%. Typically, that will come down. So all that being said, I think, with all these factors, Backstrom's shooting percentage is at 20, Pavelski's is at 28. Like those are things, not to put too much weight into the numbers and stuff, but those are things that typically will come back down to earth a little bit over the course of a full season. Maybe in a 56 game season, you can kind of carry that a little bit longer. Quinn Hughes' shooting percentage is like 2%. So he's still racking up the points as a playmaker. He's facilitating the puck. His puck luck, at least in the scoring department, should get better. So I'm going to stick with Quinn Hughes, like you said. But it's really interesting to look at, some of those little elements of those guys being in that top 10 in scoring. It's certainly, different, I think, to be looking at that right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Ellie, fifth and final question, Multiple Choice Madness. Monday, we had the Super Bowl and we had the great star power matchup. A lot of people thought it maybe from a star power perspective, it was the greatest matchup in the Super Bowl. We got Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes. Got me thinking, Haley, what's the best star matchup we've ever seen in the Stanley Cup final in the last 20 years? So I'll say since the year 2000, what is the best star power matchup we've ever seen in the Stanley Cup final? Is it A, Patrick Waugh versus Martin Brodeur, Avalanche and Devils in 2001? Is it B, Jerome Iginla versus Vinny LeCavalier in 2004, Calgary, Tampa? C, what about back-to-back years of seeing Sid Crosby up against Nick Lidstrom, 2008, 2009, Detroit, Pittsburgh? D, Steven Stamkos, Patrick Kane met in the Stanley Cup final in 2015 where Chicago took down Tampa? Or E, you can go somewhere else, Haley. Is there another matchup? What's the best star matchup we've seen in the Stanley Cup final in the past 20 years?
Well, I will say it's not the Stanley Cup final, but if I can cheat a little bit, I think the Washington-Pittsburgh series, when Crosby and Ovechkin both had hat tricks in that one game in the series, is probably the most fun, best star power matchup I've ever watched. I remember watching that and just like it was like you felt spoiled watching that game. Crosby and Ovechkin going goal for goal and both getting hat tricks. I believe that game went into overtime. And I think that was the year that the Penguins won their first Stanley Cup, which gets into the Crosby Backstrom. It maybe shows, it just feels maybe like a little bit of a cop out because it's Sidney Crosby, but having the Penguins Detroit Red Wings go back to back in those 2 years and having Crosby and Nick Lidstrom back to back, I mean, again, you just feel spoiled watching that 2 years straight. Just two of the best to do it at their position. I think the Iginla LeCavalier one is great too, because When you have those kind of Hockey Hall of Fame induction conversations, you know, LeCavalier won that Stanley Cup, so he has the ring that Iggy doesn't, but Iggy still kind of has the better legacy. And obviously, as we saw, he was a first ballot Hall of Famer. So that was a really interesting one, but I'm going to go with Crosby and Lidstrom.
You know, Haley, I actually covered that Washington-Pittsburgh series in 2009. Was great to be in the building when Sid and Ovi had matching hat tricks. Now you need to let everyone know how old you were just to mock me. You're in high school, weren't you? No, you weren't even. Were you? 2009,
I would have been in high school.
There we go.
What, okay. We're 2021 now.
Yeah.
Let me just...
Okay, so that's good. Okay, now that actually makes me feel better. I was worried you might have been in elementary school.
Well, I don't know. I remember how old you are in high school. I was probably in grade 9. Like, I would have been 12 or 13 years old. Ooh,
man. Okay. Well, that does. That makes me feel old. But I'm hanging my hat on the fact I'm the same age as the guy, as the Super Bowl winning quarterback right now. So, you know what? I'm hanging my hat on that. I still got lots of years left in me. Look, I'm taking A. I'm saying Patrick Waugh, Marty Brodeur. And the reason why, I think you can make a compelling argument that both of those guys are in the conversation of the GOAT. For their position. Yeah. And it's kind of a little bit maybe like Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady in that they play the same position. And I think a lot of people would tell you Patrick Waugh is the greatest goalie of all time. But you know what? Marty Brodeur is pretty accomplished as well with 3 Stanley Cups and an Olympic gold medal. And look, there's a lot of things that make Brodeur and Waugh really compelling. So if I had to pick, hey, what's the best star power matchup? I'd say Waugh-Brodeur. But I get really disappointed, Haley, when I think, like, we never got a Gretzky-Lemieux Stanley Cup. We probably won't get a Crosby-McDavid Stanley Cup. You know, I would settle for, you know, Nate McKinnon and Crosby, or, you know, I would settle for anything. But I wish the NHL, we got a little bit more of that kind of star power. Cause really in the last, even when you think about Crosby Stanley Cups, like one was against Nashville and they're not really a star power team. He got San Jose one year, but like Thornton at the end of it, wasn't the Thornton from, you know, 2006-07. Right. So I wish the NHL, we would get some better kind of star power matchups in the Stanley Cup. All right. As we wrap up this show, Haley, time for us to open up the hail bag. Got a couple of questions here for you. And I always love the names. I took these ones from Twitter, Haley, and I love the names that come in. I'm going to start from this one. This tweet came in from Jebediah Octavius. Jebediah Octavius, okay? And first of all, I guess it's a he, Jebediah, but Jebediah tweeted at us and said, what are your thoughts, Haley, the first time covering the BOA? And I was like, wait, BOA, what is this? And then I was like, oh, Battle of Alberta. And what do you think about the lack of fans inside the arena? Has that sort of decreased the intensity? So look, we had a Battle of Alberta game that you attended on Saturday between Calgary and Edmonton. What was that like? And what have been some of your takeaways being inserted into one of hockey's great rivalries?
Yeah, well, it's funny because I did a radio interview and they were asking me, you know, it was with a radio station in Edmonton, and they were saying, you know, welcome to the Battle of Alberta, you know, are you excited, blah, blah, blah. And I just remember watching the last game of last season where Edmonton and Calgary played against each other, and it was the huge scrum, it was the goalie fight, and I was sitting in Toronto at the Westin at the hotel bar. Because I was on the road with the Sens, they're playing the Leafs. And I remember sitting at the hotel bar, one of my friends came to meet me, we were having a drink watching the game, and all hell broke loose. And I was just like, what is this? Like, this is incredible. Like, I mean, violence is bad, you know, concussions are bad. But watching that in the moment, like the entire bar was just, even people who weren't huge hockey fans, like everyone was watching the televisions. They're like, what the hell is going on? Like, this is insanity. And I just remember watching that. And then when I obviously came to Calgary, like the Battle of Alberta was huge. Like, I was really excited to be able to cover something like that. I just think that games like that are great for hockey because those are the games where, like I said, you're in the hotel bar, there's the people with their Leafs jerseys, people with their Sens jerseys after the game, but then there's people just staying at the hotel, but everyone's watching. And I just think that's so great. So I was really excited. The first Battle of Alberta game obviously didn't have the same kind of heat. There was no goalie fight. You know, Jacob Markstrom wasn't dropping the gloves at center ice. Somebody did ask him, though, when was your last goalie fight? And he was like, probably 6 years ago in Utica. Like, not something I'm really going to be doing. It's not something I practice. So obviously there was no big brawls. Like, there was a little bit of you know, spice to it towards the end. You know, Matthew Tkachuk is, you know, always kind of the one stirring the pot a little bit. So it was great. I thought it was a first period wasn't very good for the Flames, but the hockey game ended up being great. You had some obvious displays of what Connor McDavid can do with his speed. Johnny Gaudreau was fantastic. His no-look backhand pass to Sam Bennett was amazing. His glove side, like, top corner goal was amazing. So in terms of the hockey that the Flames put on the ice, I thought it was great. Obviously, it wasn't a goalie brawl game. And I do think, you know, without fans, it takes out the energy and the electricity that you could feel in the city. Matthew Tkachuk was talking about how in normal years, normal circumstances, the energy and the electricity in Calgary when Edmonton's in town, or it's just palpable. Like, the whole city is buzzing. Everyone's excited. The Oilers are in town. Everyone's talking about it in Calgary. So obviously this year, that's something that I obviously missed out on, and I couldn't kind of walk to the rink and just see and feel the excitement around that game because the fans weren't allowed in the building. But I think for the players, the energy level was certainly there because, you know, it's easy to get up for a game when you're a player playing against a divisional rival.
And last question from the Hailbag that we have time for today. And I love this. Again, I told you, I love the usernames, Haley. This one is from Jean-Claude Trans Am. That's right.
Okay.
Jean-Claude Trans Am tweets and says, what is your ideal fourth line construction? I know that scoring is often needed in your top two lines, but I'm wondering if you think the things should be changed in the way people view the fourth line and moving away from energy checking lines and that type of role. And, you know, Haley, I always think about when the Boston, and it's been 10 years now, this is what's nutty. When the Bruins won that cup in 2011, I always think about that's the most famous fourth line was the Bruins Merlot line of Danny Paillet, Gregory Campbell, and Sean Thornton. And they kind of had this kind of grinders mentality, and Claude Julien had a ton of trust in them. And they could chip in with the odd goal, but that was kind of, to me, a different era. I think a lot of people now don't want to see lumbering, kind of forecheck heavy, just fourth liners. They want to see a little bit of skill and speed on their fourth line. So if Haley was general manager of an NHL team, what would her fourth line look like?
I think my fourth line would need to look like a combination of the both because you want to have guys who can chip in some goals. You want that secondary scoring on your roster, in that bottom six and in that fourth line. But I think you also need a bit of that energy. You need, you know, as maybe old school as it is, I do think that there is still value in, you know, a huge check. Maybe not so much like a big fight, but, you know, I think there is value in a fourth line going out there. They get a couple good hits. They bring some energy. They maybe get a couple scoring opportunities. They're solid defensively. That's a big part of it. You don't want just like checkers or fighters out there who just cough up the puck and get caved in their own zone the entire time. I think you need to have a blend of that skill. They're solid defensively. They can generate offense, but they can also still add that energy to the game with their physicality. But that's the thing. The energy can be provided from that fourth line, from a good blocked shot, from a good defensive play, from a good offensive chance. So like I said, I would want to see a blend of that, you know, bringing some energy, but not just in a physical way, a little bit of both, in my opinion.
Well, Haley, we'll have to leave it there. And speaking of energy, you brought it today on the podcast, but let's see if you can bring it on the way out like you didn't last week. Haley, this was fun as always. Have yourself a great week, and I'll get you again next Monday.
Thanks, Ian. That was like the most embarrassing clip, but I had to post it anyways. The look in my eyes, I was looking past you. I didn't care. I was like, I'm done talking. I want to go get another coffee because I'm in mountain time. So, I mean, it's not even that early for mountain time. I'm just being a big wimp. But yeah, I just completely ignored you. God bless our producer, Chris, for clipping that together to make it seem like I said, thanks, Ian. Have a great week.
Yeah.
As I just did now.
Exactly. See, there you go. People can feel the chemistry. All right. Have a great week. Yeah. And thanks to everybody for listening to The Athletic Hockey Show. We ask you to please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Leave a rating and review. We would certainly appreciate that. And if you want to subscribe to The Athletic, you can get an annual subscription for just $3.99 a month when you visit theathletic.com/hockeyshow. Don't miss out. Scott Burnside, Pierre LeBrun will be back at it on Wednesday with The Athletic Hockey Show. I'll be back at it on Thursday with Sean McAdoo.